Cameron, if you could tell our audience a bit about your path to English Technical Sales, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Well, English Technical Sales is a manufacturer's rep company. The way our business works, we cover geographical areas under contract with the suppliers we represent. So in our case, we cover Southern California from San Luis Obispo to 75 miles south of the Mexican border. And primarily our markets are military, defense, aerospace, but we're what you would call in our industry a broad line manufacturer's rep, in that we also try to target the industrial, medical, and even some commercial products, such as automotive or telecom, networking, that kind of thing. We have 12 people. Most of our people work out of their homes, but we do have an office out here in Lake Forest where we, from time to time, we'll even stock for our East Coast and our overseas suppliers. But for the most part, our job is to really represent and to develop the position and the presence of our suppliers, mainly working with engineers here in Southern California.
And how long have you been doing this, Cam? I know the answer to the question, but let's talk a little bit about that, your experience in this industry, in this space.
Well, you may say I have a little bit of a warped experience or perspective, because I right out of college, I jumped into the electronics industry. Originally started kind of working with distribution type products, and then from there we moved on to covering the account base in Orange County. And in fact, early on, my role for the company was to work mainly with our Japanese clientele, both customers and some of the Japanese suppliers we represented. Back in the day, there was quite a few emerging Japanese manufacturers and customers here in the Orange County area, so that was sort of my first role. But it's been about 25 years now. I started right out of college at about 21, and just never left this industry.
Interesting. And now that you've evolved to the position where you own your firm and you're leading this professional sales organization here in the market, as you've described, you know, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, of all the things you've learned in that 20-plus years of business experience, Cam, is there one kind of overarching or guiding principle that you use in how you run your firm?
Well, you know, that's a tough thing to consolidate down into one thought, but I would say that, you know, over the years, I've really changed in my approach to managing people, and I've really changed in my philosophy, I think, in terms of how I lead my own company. Our company is relatively small, so it's really super critical that we, you know, have a cohesive team, that everybody in our team has to produce, otherwise, you know, we just aren't successful. So there's no room for inefficiency in the rep business because, you know, for one, our contracts are fairly short-term. In fact, most of our suppliers have the option to cancel our contracts with 30 days' notice. So it's a very, very, you know, focused business on performance. And it's just kind of an interesting thing. But in the beginning, I was sort of a workaholic. I was super intense. If you talk to one of my customers or one of my suppliers or one of my salespeople, they would say, you know, he's definitely type A. He's just super intense. And, you know, I was always just going full speed. But some time ago, my wife and I started working with horses, breeding and training horses, and I had a major philosophical shift in my approach to how I manage people, because one of the things that I learned in learning to train horses, I know this sounds like a really strange segue, but was that horses don't respond to intimidation or pain or negative reinforcement. They respond to leadership and trust. They respond to pressure, but when I say that, I don't mean pressure like like you would see from a overzealous boss, but pressure that says, you know, you just keep asking the horse when you're training it to do what you want it to do, and as long as it trusts that you're not going to hurt it, eventually it will try for you. So it sounds like a strange analogy, but the horse has taught me a lot. My experience with training horses is a passion for me, and my wife and I own a breeding ranch where she competes in dressage, and I start the horses. And to give you a little example, even the vernacular in the horse industry has changed. It used to be that you would break a horse, and that's the old cowboy philosophy. And that's pretty much how I approached my business. I was going to break it down and make it work. And I promise, Rick, we'll get this back to a business analogy here pretty soon. But the bottom line was, I started recognizing in my suppliers that the best companies to represent were companies that showed leadership, and they built a trust-based relationship with us as a third-party entity. And we found out when you have a relationship like that with a supplier, they had clear leadership, they had clear direction, they had a commitment to that direction, that everything went better. We were given better support as a sales front end for that company. We were given better resources. We were trusted with doing the job for them, and we were supported. And so as an independent manufacturer's rep, one of our goals is always to reach a level of partnership with the suppliers we represent to become what would be considered, I think, more of an interdependent. So they're depending on us to access the markets for them, and we're depending on them to do and deliver quality products to those markets. So going back to the horse thing, you know, we just found out that leadership was key. And leadership and the fact that we could trust that they were going to do what they said they were going to do. And they could trust that we were going to do what we said we were going to do. They'd ask us for a forecast, and we would give them a legitimate, honest forecast. And then we would meet it. So this thing about training horses really showed me that, you know, when a horse recognizes your leadership, it's kind of like if you ever observe the herd of horses, they will follow the leader, and the leader will lead them to water and grazing pastures, and they end up building a trust, and that leader shows the most competent use of resources and guiding the herd. So on a personal note, I eventually ended up getting into a management program called MAP, and I'm not trying to, I don't really want to fall into the mode where it's going to sound like a commercial, but the one thing, MAP is just basic management practices, and the one thing it came out of it was it pointed out that I really needed to work on my own leadership. So things like coaching my team and providing a clear direction was something that was pointed out to me that I was just going at too fast a speed to slow down and do that. So for the past 2 years, we've really seen some nice results in, I think, to a great extent, to the fact that the MAP program, and then prior to that, maybe five or so years prior to that, I changed my personal style to approaching my employees.
Well, that's clearly a thoughtful answer, and it's interesting to me how you can relate other interests and business interests that you have, as well as personal interests, into running a successful firm. And your ability to be self-reflective, as you talked about here, relative to, you know, how you've needed to change as a leader to show up differently to get, you know, better results out of your people. So you also mentioned about how you've had the opportunity in your business to observe the leadership styles and the function or dysfunction, if you will, within your supplier partners. And that's really part of what why I was so excited, Cam, to have you on our radio show today here at Critical Mass, because your firm really does take a strategic role in helping your suppliers. It is a deep relationship because of the nature of how your business model, even given the fact that it's somewhat tenuous in that, you know, it can be terminated many times with a 30-day written notice, but nonetheless, they're long-term relationships that develop when the chemistry is right. So, you know, we've had other executives and business owners on talking about outsourcing functions, and I know that your business is more strategic than to say, and I'm doing it a disservice by saying your rep firm is an outsourced sales and marketing arm of a manufacturer, but for people who may not be familiar with your business model, it sort of opens the door to kind of what we're going to talk about now. But could you spend a couple minutes and sort of talk about that strategic role that you play for your suppliers?
Yeah, that'd be great. I think that, you know, if you talk about lawyers or if you talk about, I don't know, car salesmen, and you talk about manufacturers' reps, people are going to have had the history where maybe they were interfaced with a manufacturer's rep that was a bad experience, or maybe hopefully they had a good experience. But I think that, you know, in our case, I can only speak to the level of service and the level of expertise that we try to provide. But we've been in the same industry segment, which would be representing companies in the electromechanical power and even some digital type electronic components for the past 25 years. To give you an example of kind of how we become a strategic partner is, you know, our salespeople stick with us. We've had the same salespeople. My partner Ron has been with us for, you know, worked directly with me for the past 20 years. My other key partner, Bob Garcia, has been with me for over 10. Several of our sales reps have been with us for over 10. My operations manager started in our company when she was 18, and she's 20 years later, she's still here today. So, but part of that is the reason I mention that is it's critical because one of the things we offer our suppliers, and by the way, I don't mind you referencing as outsourcing. Outsourcing, you know, has a tendency to bring up all kinds of presumptions about what you're doing, but in our case, as I had mentioned before, our goal is to really become the front end for our suppliers and become to be considered as an extension of their factory, of their management team, of their sales strategy. So the better we can do that, usually the better connection we have with that management team's goals and objectives through trying to reach our market. But the other thing we bring, if we are able to put that together, is the fact that we've been calling on some of the same customers, engineers that in some cases rise up through the ranks and become, you know, just the key people in some of the customers here in our territory. So because we've had stability, companies we represent, we'll see three or four sales managers come and go in the course of maybe 5 years, and we'll stay representing that company through that whole period. And we'll be calling on these same engineers through that entire period. So, you know, let's just face it, in our market with this goofy economy we've just all survived and are trying to fight our way through, you know, there's a lot of change, a lot of volatility. But we offer that one feature that we're staying focused on calling on the same engineers, the same customers. One of our biggest problems is the customers have been going out of business or coming into business at such a rate that sometimes it becomes challenging. But what we find is the people may move around, the engineers that we get to know and build rapport with, but they usually don't go far because no one wants to leave Southern California. So,
right, if you have a choice, right.
It gives us a little bit of an advantage when you know someone for 20 years and they've developed a strong relationship with you.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say you're comfortable with the concept of outsourcing, because for those people, again, who aren't familiar with a sales model where the selling and a lot of the personal marketing, if you will, is actually contracted out to your firm, what's different is, in my mind, and maybe this is my history as a sales and marketing professional coming to the forefront, it's a different kind of outsourcing because, like you said, you're the spokesperson for your manufacturer to their client. You control the client relationship to a large degree, and the personal relationship, which people who are familiar with the selling process understand how important it is to have that personal connection between the seller and the buyer. That's really been given over to your firm, and you do it on behalf of that manufacturer. As you said, you may have a 20-year relationship with a buying influence, and the manufacturer may want at that relationship because maybe their exposure to that buying influence isn't nearly as deep or as rich as yours. So it is really critical, I think, as the customer-facing representative of a manufacturer, that you have a deep strategic understanding of, you know, how they make decisions and how things get actioned within your partners. Is that correct?
That's very correct. Yeah, I really appreciate the way that you tried to break it down there. I can't tell you how many times neighbors or friends in different industries will tell me, you know, they'll ask me, so tell me about your business, and I'll try to describe what you just described. And they default to, so you're a distributor. And for whatever reason, it's hard for people to get their mind around the fact that we truly do represent. We go out, we try to establish your technology on the front end with companies that are developing maybe a new product or a new technology themselves. In fact, one of the best examples I can give you of a project that we were involved in that people may remember, in San Diego, around the late 1990s, 1999, 2000, cell phones were still being manufactured right there in San Diego. And lithium ion technology was brand new. So a supplier that we had been familiar with and actually knew some of the people that worked there, a battery manufacturer, approached us and said, you know, we'd really like to get your help in penetrating and accessing the engineers at Sony and at Qualcomm down in San Diego. So we said, well, yeah, sure, we could do that. And we worked from that point on to introduce this new technology. You know, you may remember the old NiCad batteries.
Yeah.
Probably had about a half the life that the new lithium-ion batteries have, and then they get this memory effect where every time you charged them, they would have less and less life. So eventually we were successful in introducing lithium-ion technology to the Sony cell phone project, and over the course of the next year, that supplier sold $25 million worth of lithium-ion batteries. And not only was it successful for everybody, but from that point on, lithium-ion batteries were pretty much the standard. And they're still used today, even though the chemistry's changed a little bit.
Well, you know, the relationship that you have, which is for those people that are listening that have sales experience, they understand how sometimes when you make a commitment to a client, and you're relying on the inside operations of your company to deliver, that can be a challenge. Well, I guess I would ask those people who have that experience, imagine what it's like when you are your own separate company, but yet you're making those commitments on behalf of your strategic partner, and then you have to go back and affect them to deliver on the commitments that you've made on their behalf to what in essence is still your client, the business relationship relative to the, you know, to the face-to-face, belly-to-belly is between your employees or you personally, Cam, and that client. And so that's why I see you in such a strategic, an interesting strategic role that, that frankly I'd like to see, I believe that more manufacturing companies and other companies should consider this as an effective way to grow their business. Because it does give them a lot of advantages in a market where maybe heretofore they don't have presence. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, I'm biased, but I think there's a couple practical things that we offer. First of all, we are typically a lower cost of sales. If you look at the average cost of sales in our industry, when you have a direct sales force, you're going to pay that individual salary. There may be some bonus incentive. You're going to have a car for the individual, health insurance, office. There's travel and training and, you know, various expenses. So it's been estimated in our industry that runs about 7% fixed cost of sales for you to have a sales rep, direct sales rep approach. Now, in our case, our typical commission runs around 5%, and quite frankly, with the economy, we felt downward pressure on that. In some cases, it goes 20% lower than that, but it's all depending on the size of the sales level that we see. But it's a lower cost of sales to begin with, but it's also a variable cost of sales. So, for example, if the economy is collapsing and there's really it's a systemic problem, and it's a situation where your sales are dropping off, the one upside to a very negative situation is your cost of sales is variable and it's going down with that. But really, when you look at it, it's important that you realize that, you know, whether the economy's struggling or the economy's booming, you want to be at the front end of any opportunity that's developing. You want to have your products. In our case, we're a very application-specific type rep, where we're not selling commodities as much as we're trying to focus on engineering special product into very specific applications. So yeah, I appreciate the way you broke that down, but you know, there's some practical benefits to looking at a rep as well.
Right, but looking at a outsourced professional selling partnership versus building the infrastructure and hiring direct employees to do the same function puts you in a situation many times where I think of it as you need to be good for your suppliers, but it's dangerous for you to be great. And what I mean by that is there is that, my sense is there is a tendency when an independent rep firm becomes very successful in a market for a manufacturer. I don't know if this happened in your earlier example relative to the batteries or not, but when some people within a company start to see a lot of dollars flowing out to a third-party sales organization, they start to question, well, for that same amount of money, could we get something more, you know, more control or whatever? Can you talk about what it's like to be a business owner who's living in a space that where you need to be good, but it's sometimes dangerous to be great?
Yeah, it is a frustrating experience. In the earlier example of the battery project we were involved in, Mitsubishi actually bought the battery company that we were representing, and they took one look at those commissions and they said, in effect, we're going to reorganize your commission percentage. And we ended up having to negotiate a settlement and walking away from it. But to your point, usually I know I'm in trouble when the CFO or the controller starts to ask questions about our commission checks.
Yeah, you don't want to be talking to them.
Yeah. When I hear from a corporate guy that says, you know, we've been reviewing the rep contract. But you're absolutely right. I mean, let's face it, when you see commission checks going out monthly that are the equivalent to maybe someone's annual salary, that company's going to start asking questions. And it's tough. I mean, I don't really have a great answer for that. I think what happens is we hope that we can show ourselves to be reasonable and work out a fair and equitable return on that still allows us to represent that company. And in most cases, though, you know, those days of what we would call bluebirds or just, you know, runaway projects like that are sort of going away. A lot of the super high volume, like cell phones and computers and consumer and commercial high volume products, have moved over to China. So what we're finding today is that we have a very balanced line card. We don't have any one line that is out of control, but in terms of just really large commissions, we have what we think is a pretty good equitable partnership. I say that, and it's funny, but you know, there have been successful reps that have represented some of the larger semiconductor companies, and in those cases, I think what they do is they just negotiate what they think is a fair commission, and it ends up sort of being worked out. In our case, you know, living in that space that you described, we just always have to fight to show our value, and then we have to show that, you know, I guess what you'd say is our leverage position is that we are always trying to bring in new programs that, you know, in that case, if they were to cancel our contract, they would lose out on the opportunity. They'd lose out on the opportunity of the programs that we're developing. And if the value stream goes away, though, if our value proposition is that we're bringing in access to new developing projects among the customers we call on, we really see the writing on the wall, and we start looking for companies that need our service to develop those markets. And some of the more mature markets, when we see that they've matured, when we see that they're kind of declining, we pretty much have to start planning on finding new ventures. So I don't know how else to put it.
So, kind of last point on this from my experience is you, when you layer on top of that what we just talked about and what you eloquently described with the churning that many of your but the marketplace has seen in the role of the VP of sales or whatever title it might be, director, you're kind of constantly probably on a bit of a treadmill internally making sure the decision makers of this generation or of this administration understand and perceive the strategic value of your relationship, because you know you're seeing a bit of a, I would imagine a bit of a revolving door on the manufacturer side, just because, again, I'm showing my sales bias a bit, I'm sure, but many times the people that pay the price for a slowing revenue stream are the sales organizations.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to look at it from our perspective, it's sort of like I like to tell my staff, 51% of our time is spent representing these companies to the market, and 49% of our time is spent representing ourselves and our customers to the management team and to the organization itself that we represent.
Right.
So we spend a considerable amount of time trying to maintain a connection and relationships and trying to communicate the value that we're bringing. And it's a difficult thing sometimes. I have to put a lot of energy into reminding my sales staff, you need to communicate what you're working on, because if you don't show them being the managers and the executives that you just described, then you don't show them what you're working on, then they just don't know. And, you know, it's some of our projects, especially within the military and defense markets, can take 2 to 5 years. My partner, Bob, was part of a key sort of task force for one of our suppliers 10 years ago on this JSF fighter jet. And they have yet to build these jets. And we're still working away on that project. So for 10 years, we've been investing our time, talent, and resources in the JSF project for our suppliers, and we have to keep reminding them. So it's a constant closed loop kind of process.
Right. Cam, if there's a business owner or top executive out there who wants to learn more about English technical sales, your business model, or other aspects about you or your firm, how do you suggest they do that?
Well, I would invite them to look at our website. It's a good starting point. It's www.englishsales.com. There's a couple very good organizations if they're just considering representation as a strategy. There's the MANA organization, M-A-N-A. And then there's, of course, the ERA, Electronic Representatives Association. We're members of both groups, and they're good a good resource. They have a lot of materials, a lot of white papers, a lot of guides and manuals on what you would do if you wanted to access a manufacturer's rep strategy.
Well, I appreciate the time that you spent talking about your business and your willingness to be open about the business and sharing that with our listening audience today. And so on behalf of the listeners, both the ones that are listening to the show live and those that will be downloading and listening to it at a future date, Cam, I want to say thank you for being on Critical Mass, the radio show.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. It was good talking to you.
Have a good day.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Cameron English of English Technical Sales. And if you're not familiar with an outsourced professional sales and marketing partner, I would strongly encourage you to do some research based on what Cam said. It is a, in my experience, again, as being a sales and marketing manager and executive for a long time, a very viable alternative to building the infrastructure inside of a manufacturing company to go to market. It's a very effective go-to-market strategy for many firms. And some of the biggest firms in technology especially have used a rep strategy for years very successfully.